Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Andy Troy Show, where you can sample all the great things New York has to offer. For the next 60 minutes, I'll not only clue you into some great things to do around town, but we'll also chat with some interesting local personalities. Tonight's guests are Nick Christophers and Frankie D. from Mob Candy Magazine. But first, our shameless plugs. For those of you who haven't read my anti-aging book, Living Young, 32 Habits of Ageless People, there's no time like the present. It's always the right time to stay young and get healthy. Also, if you're going to live a long time, you might as well enjoy it. So check out my DVD, The Bedroom Workout for Men, on how to improve men's sexual performance through exercise. Both are available on Amazon.com and my website, AndyTroy.com. Remember that if you bring my book to any of my events, I will be happy to autograph it for you. Speaking of which, our next event will be our 6th annual Halloween party on Friday, October 28th from 6 to 10 p.m. at Taj Lounge, located at 48 West 21st Street between 5th and 6th Avenues. We'll have a costume contest with valuable prizes, including an all-inclusive Pocono vacation worth over $1,000. We'll also feature a performance by the infamous singing vampire Baron Misaraka. Admission is free. There'll be lots more great surprises. It'll be a great night, so come join us. The details for this and all my monthly events are on my website, tastingnyc.com. The Andy Troy Show has a fan page on Facebook that contains links to previous shows as well as pictures of all our past guests. Check it out by punching The Andy Troy Show into your Facebook browser. If you haven't heard my animal rescue song, Hoping for Another Morning, you can both hear the song and see the video by going to YouTube and punching Hoping for Another Morning into the browser. My good friend and producer, John Anello, a.k.a. Johnny Mandolin, has a CD called La Voce Mia. Order your copy today on johnnymandolin.com or contact E. Rossi at 212-226-9254 and they'll hook you up. Finally, sponsors, we want them. If you'd like to promote your goods and or services to our vast listening audience, contact the station or me directly at andyftroy@aol.com. Okay, it took a while for me to bring these guys back out of hiding. They had done some things, and we're not going to talk about that, but they are now back. And we've got, do we have three guys from Brooklyn here?
Two.
Not just us two.
Three.
Yeah, Landers from Brooklyn.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah, that's what I meant.
Oh, okay, sorry.
yeah I'm three. In fact, I grew up two blocks, I was telling Nick, from the infamous Gemini Lounge.
Really? So Flatbush.
Royce Flatlands,
yeah.
My band actually played in the Gemini Lounge.
Really?
I had no idea how important it was to do a good show.
It was really important.
For those of us who don't, in the audience who don't know, the Iceman Ted Kuklinski murdered, I think, 100 people in there for the mob. I'm hoping that was after hours.
Yeah, it was. It was a lot of other guys did it, too. He was
yeah,
the
Dracula
only one.
And all
yeah,
of them.
A lot of guys there.
So how did you guys develop an interest in this topic?
Develop an interest. That's a good one.
In the magazine? Or how did the magazine come across together? Interest is that we're ex-hoolums, so that the interest is there already.
Yeah. I mean, oh, so, are you?
Yeah.
I didn't recognize you from...
We're lucky ones.
Oh, okay.
Under the radar, so to speak.
Okay. So do you always had some kind of... So that's where your interest came from. This is kind of the sort of stuff you grew up with, basically?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, my father was bodyguard for Larry Gallo.
Oh, that's
so
intense.
You know, and I bodyguard a few guys in my day, so we've always been doing it since we're kids. You know, I grew up in it.
How were those guys to deal with? How did they treat? How were you treated as a bodyguard?
They treated very well. You got to protect them. I guess they want to be nice to you. You're protecting their ass, so they got to be pretty nice to you.
Okay. The problem is you're potentially in some bad situations, I guess, right?
Well, that's a choice you make by doing that. You know, you're aware of it, you know, but that's the choice you make, you know. It's not that, a lot of people, it's an honor to be chosen for that, you know. So, to some people, it is. Some people just grow into it because they're the only one there to do so, and other ones chose because of their capabilities. So,
okay.
It's I wouldn't recommend it for anybody, but.
That's for sure.
Okay. Now, tell us how Mob Candy Magazine came about.
Okay, Mob Candy Magazine started from a clothesline. we designed a clothesline. A friend of mine designed a clothesline. And from the clothesline, we sat down, and I was in always in the distributing business because we had School Magazine, the distributing ship, for 32 years.
Oh, you were involved with that?
Yeah. We were sole distributor for 32 years.
So sex and violence do mix.
Perfect.
Good.
Perfect. So for 32 years, we had Screw, and then we had other publications that we published ourselves. So when it all closed down in the late, in about 2003, 2004, they started going out of business with Giuliani closing our stores down. A friend of mine, somebody I met that became a little acquainted with, had a clothing line called Mob Candy. And it was, you know, in its baby stages. And we tried to help him with it, but it was too hard of a business to get involved with. So we were sitting down drinking. And came up with a concept saying, you know, let's do a magazine with it. And I said to him, I said, if you come up with the, you know, an idea and, you know, what to do with it, I said, I can feed you stories, I can give you what you want, but it better look good, it better be good, you know. And can't say nothing today, you know, recent stuff, I don't want to talk about the recent. If you think old stories, historical stuff, we'll cut it, let's go. And this guy Tyrone, he put together a concept, a 40 pager to show me what it looked like, you know, and I told him I didn't like it because it was, you know, it was too, you know, wasn't going anywhere, or anywhere, here or there. So I made him actually go write the first, you know, three stories up, and then he came back with it and designed it because he was a graphic designer. I liked the way it looked, and from there on we just sat down and just, you know, drank, wrote on napkins, and just put it together.
So a black guy kind of came up with Mob Candy then.
Black, yeah, it was a black guy. Black guy from Milwaukee.
Black, you know, a lot of those black guys really like the whole gangster thing.
Love it. He loved it. He knows more than me about the historical part of it. You know, he's very good. He's very talented, and basically, he designed the first. All the characters, all the logos, all the emblems, he designed them all.
So now you're the publisher, I guess, right?
Yes.
So, Nick, what is your role in all of this?
Well, I'm the editor, and I write a lot of the stories, too. I came along, after the second, into the third issue.
Right.
I met Frankie at one of their first events at Runway here in the city. I was chasing him around the place trying to talk to him because I wanted to get involved.
Then he had his bodyguards keeping you away. See, that's a vertical move.
I found my way through somehow. And it worked out that we met and we, you know, judging from my background and what I already know and being a journalist for 15 years and coming from the, you know, similar lifestyle I grew up, but I hung out with a lot of the Italians. And being Greek, I hung out with a lot of the Greek tough guys. So I kind of walked in that circle. So I knew a little bit, knew maybe a little too much. And we just clicked. And we've been working together ever since.
Now, you brought up a good point. Black guys like it. I just wonder who actually buys this magazine. Like, what's your demographic? What'd you say?
I would say about 25 to 80.
Yeah.
A lot of older people. Got a lot of young guys, but it goes all the way up to about 80s. I got a lot of subscribers of old. So they're really enjoying it because they like to reminisce about the old stories. You know?
Are a lot of subscriptions going to Rikers Island? That would be a lot of free time.
I have none to Rikers Island, but we have over 1,000 subscriptions to prisons.
Really?
None to Rikers, but. Not to Rikers.
Yeah, and various prisons, yeah, we do.
I guess that's good because if they don't pay their bill, you know where to find them.
Yeah,
basically.
No, they know they got to pay up front.
Okay. Now, what does the magazine cover? Tell me a little about your subject matter. I know I have a copy here in front of me.
Well, each issue has a different theme. Like we had the Brooklyn issue, Hollywood issue. The one you're holding in your hand with Vinnie Pastore on the cover is the Vegas issue. So every issue has a theme behind it. And that was Frankie's idea, and which is pretty phenomenal because it gives you, like this Vegas issue has Vegas stories, you know, the Brooklyn issue had Brooklyn stories, which are pretty endless because there's just so much you can say. I mean, the Brooklyn issue alone, we didn't even tip the iceberg. It's just, so I think it's a pretty phenomenal idea where it's all theme based, you know.
Yeah, actually, speaking of Vinny, I was at his Christmas party at Cha-Cha's.
So, did he show up?
He did, believe it or not. He was there.
That's surprising.
Because he normally doesn't show up at anything.
I've actually heard that rumor, but
it's a my fact.
My experience with him was okay so far. So you obviously cover mob-related stuff, but there's other stuff in this magazine too, right? What else do you guys
do? So we do restaurant reviews. We do book reviews, movie reviews. We got puzzles in there. We have...
It's
all mob-related, yeah. But even the movies or the... Or
it's
the
everything
books,
entertainment.
It's all entertaining stuff, you know. We don't do anything current.
All right, so the meat of your magazine is crime, but I also noticed that there's some cheesecake for dessert.
Yeah, we do three. We throw three girls in each issue just for the for the candy.
Yes. So where do you find your... Are these the mob candy girls, I think they're called?
Well... After we meet them, they become mob candy girls. I mean, you know.
What's the initiation for that? Like?
No comment.
They gotta stay. They gotta stay 15 minutes from Uncle Frankie.
But can Frankie drunk. Stay 15 minutes? No. Is the question.
No, Uncle Frankie drunk for 15 minutes. They just good. Yeah, they. You know, when we get somebody that works for the magazine and they, especially the models, they usually stay on. They do all the. They do a lot of promotions for us afterwards. Everyone who's local is still with us. A lot of models coming from out of town that they. Can't stay with us because they're not locals, but all our local girls always stay with us.
So, speaking of with you, I think you guys do some events too, because as I mentioned to you, that's one of my main things.
We do a launch for each magazine we do. Every issue that we come out with, we usually have a party somewhere in the city. We also do fundraisers. We had a fundraiser for
the Heart Society.
Then we had another one with Amada Sante for
for the Children's
International.
Our
next one is coming up in January. We haven't put it together yet, but that's the launch of the next magazine, so we don't have any details on it yet.
So you don't know where this one's going to be based?
No.
Icelandic organized crime or anything?
No.
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 You're going to run out of cities? We're going to be back to Brooklyn?
No. Well, you got.
You never run out of cities.
No, you got. Because we only touch so little in each city. I mean, Brooklyn alone has. We can make an encyclopedia out of it. We did four stories. Right. I mean, you know. No. We might have to go around again, you know, and touch stuff we didn't touch. But Brooklyn sold well. I mean, we sold out of Brooklyn as soon as we got it. So we know. Everybody's interested in Brooklyn, you know, and Chicago sold out just as fast. So,
yeah, that's right.
So you're going to do any Jersey mobs too?
Yeah,
that's real popular with Sopranos.
We have a meeting coming up this week. I mean, you know, we've been so busy, but I think we have a meeting coming up this week to figure out where we're going with the stories. And it's either Jersey or
Manhattan, right?
I think it was Queens. You know, Queens area, Long Island area, or Jersey. So it's going to be one of the two.
I'm voting for Jersey.
Yeah, it's a good idea. I mean, it's got
a lot of
stories.
What about Staten Island?
Well, Staten Island, we'll go with Jersey.
Oh, okay.
We're based in Staten Island, Jersey, you know. Maybe we do Jersey.
Staten Island
with
where
Philly.
The Jersey guys leave the bodies, I think.
Yeah, used to. Now they're going further out now. now, and we'll probably even get Philly in that, you know, maybe touch a little Philly in that. It's all kind of, you know, we don't come out with many a year, so I don't want to jam everything up in one issue, because we could do an issue, you know, it'd be a lot less work for us, and just do a 300 page, you know, and do it annually, you know, and touch everything in it, and then we can be free for the rest of the year, you know, rest of the 5 months, but so many new things happen and everything changes every day, where you want to go, what you want to do, new things come in, so. You know, we have to do it the way we're doing it. But I'm tending to go to New Jersey. That would be pretty much close. But I also want to do something with the Boardwalk Empire. So I spoke with the writers, and they want to do something. So I might have to hold off on that. So, you know, it's a lot of things that control other things. So.
Does anybody ever make you an offer you can't refuse?
Not really.
No.
Not really. I mean, you got people like you and you got people dislike you. Before I got into this magazine, I had people like me and people dislike me. So I haven't seen no change in it.
I've been doing this show for 2 years. I'm waiting for someone to like me.
Wow. Well,
I'm getting along with Nick so far.
Yeah.
Well, we're
Nick
trying.
Likes everyone.
Yeah, no, not everyone.
So he's like, He's like the civil service. He'll take anybody, basically.
I don't like anyone. He likes everybody.
Oh, that seems like a good mix, then.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to have to go to a break. And when we come back, we're going to hear more about all this stuff and when, approximately, the next magazine will be out. We'll be back.
Hi, this is Marianne Morrison. Join me, uncensored and live, with entertaining and provocative guests from celebrities to world-renowned entrepreneurs with hot topics and hot talk. Wednesdays at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. High Definition Digital Radio, broadcasting to the world. Only on the Centani Broadcasting Network. Centani.
Hello, my name is Anthony Teresa, owner and producer of Blue Night Recording Studio in beautiful Orange County, California, just outside Los Angeles. As a guitarist, vocalist, bassist, session player, producer, and engineer, I have either played or recorded on over 400 CD projects. Let me tell you, it's not easy to record your own music. My goal is to help you to be the best you can be behind the mic and in the tracking room. We'll get the best possible sounds from your voice and instruments. Do you need musicians? I've got them. The top session players in Southern California and Los Angeles. Let's make your recording project a reality. You can contact me by phone at 949-338-0293. That's 949-338-0293. Or contact me an email at catduo@earthlink.net. Looking forward to hearing from you. Take care and have a great week.
Hi, this is Robbie Russell from the Garage Mania Show.
This is Nurse Cheryl.
Listen to Garage Mania Radio on the
Centani Broadcasting Network.
High Definition Digital Audio. Broadcasting to the world.
All right, the texts are coming in fast and furious. Dave texted in, forget about it. That was creative. Dave, you're a writer. Work on your material. Okay. Anyway, so when do you guys expect your next magazine? Do you have any sense of that?
I think we're releasing it early January. That's the release date.
Early January.
Yeah.
And you will have an event or is this open to the general public or what?
Yes. Yeah, we're probably going to just open house for that one. Yeah, we did last one with an invitation, but we're gonna. A lot of people complained they couldn't come, and so we're gonna do open.
Okay.
Yeah.
And there will be Mob Candy Girls.
There'll be Mob Candy Girls.
What was this?
There'll be. I have Karen Gavano on the cover, so we're gonna have a lot of different people there.
Now, how long has the magazine been around? How many episodes do you guys have so far?
Six.
Six.
We've done six and a book.
Yeah, we'll talk about the book in a little bit because I did see that like a coffee table book, right?
Coffee table book.
Yeah,
then we did a new book called Mob Candy's Brooklyn Gangsters, 70 Square Miles of Blood and Balls.
Okay, tell us about that. What do we got in there?
Well, it was Frankie's idea, and it's basically Brooklyn Gangsters. But the book is unique in the sense that it delves into guys that you don't normally read about, and like Al Capone, for example, even though he's a name that we all know, there's material in here that you would never find anywhere else.
And he is a Brooklyn guy because everybody thinks of him as Chicago.
Exactly.
Right.
So we did everything up until Chicago.
Okay.
Yeah. And there's 22 guys in there. There's some Capone to Gotti.
Gotti isn't like, he's like a Queens guy?
But he was born in Brooklyn.
Was he?
New York.
Went to Franklin K. Hale's High School.
Franklin K. Lane?
Lane, that's it. Franklin Lane he went to.
Okay.
That's in Brooklyn, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. That's kind of like border. That's one of those borderline schools.
He lived in East New York.
Yeah. But I mean, like, the book covers a lot of things in here that you would not read, like Al Capone, what school he went to, what's his first job that he ever had when he was young. I mean, it talks about stuff that you would not find somewhere else.
Well, tell us something that we don't know about these guys, because that would be really interesting to find out. To think about it a little bit, I want to know something that's an interesting fact about one of the famous people we know. Like, we got on the cover of your current magazine, we got one of my people, Bugsy Siegel.
Okay. And what sense? What would you want? Something that nobody
Oh, it doesn't
knows?
Have to be Bugsy, but yeah, I mean that would be good. Or something about any of the guys in your book.
Well, we know that. But doing our research, that what's his name? Frankie Yale went out with Tony Napoli's grandmother. A lot of people don't know that. Now Tony Knapp is Jimmy Knapp's son. Jimmy Knapp was one of big earner with the Cambino family.
Huh.
Went out with his grandmother. Now a lot of people don't know Frankie Yale went out with his grandmother. You know, you find out by, you know, speaking to people, we're trying to find out what school Frankie Yale went to, you know, when he came over. But we found out that Frankie Yale didn't go to school. He came right from Italy at 17. You know, we went crazy looking for schools for this guy. But he was 17 when he came over already. So
same case with Albert.
He was a gangster when he came over. Same with Albert Anastasia.
Albert, too. Anastasia, you know, same deal.
You know, we find stuff like that out.
14, he went straight to the docks.
Right.
Yeah. And one of these guys, you've obviously must have hung out with these guys a lot, partied, went out drinking, etc. What do these guys like to hang out with?
What's a
night out with these guys?
Years ago, I haven't been around these guys in a long time, so we used to go to some nice places. We used to go to Regimes. We used to go to Hippopotamus. We used to go to Cacachas. It was a Gold Copa, San Susan,
Red Parrot.
Red Parrot was big.
But do they tend to get into any trouble?
No, I tell you the truth. Everybody treated him real well. You know, to me it was almost like magical. It was like Hollywood and gangsters. It was like, you know, it was like if Clark Gable came into place, and they would go, "Oh, Mr. Gable, have a table." It was the same thing with a local gangster that was a little known, or they would come in and treat them the same way, man. It was almost like being a celebrity.
Well, there's a certain logic to it.
Yeah, yeah. I've seen guys give autographs. You know, I've seen girls come over. I saw a woman come over. I was walking down the street one time. on Mulberry Street, and I saw a strange girl who just went over to John Gotti Sr. and kissed him. Just ran, an older woman too. Just ran and kissed him. He was shocked. He was nice about it, but in shock, like it was a celebrity. You know what I mean?
Well, you always
really
hear.
You never hear. You know.
Well, these guys were very popular with the public. I mean, John Gotti, while the police might not have liked him much, he threw a great party. I mean, you always heard about the 4th of July party.
July 4th. Sure. Yes.
Yeah, he was liked amongst the people, you know. Well, everybody likes you when you're, you know, when they have no reason not to like you. You know what I mean? You know, but my little experience with John, I liked him, you know, but I had no reason not to like him, you know. He was a rough guy, you know, command a lot of respect, and he was rough around the edges. I mean, as good looking or meticulous he was with clothing, he was still rough around the edges. So you know, with mannerisms, but I liked him. I had a conversation with him 2-3 times, and, you know, I have no, nothing to say bad about him anyway.
So what was that Hunt and Fish Club that he used to hang out at? Was do you ever go down there?
Yes, I've been down there. Yeah. It's no longer there.
No,
so long as it's a nail place.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What about the guy who wandered around in his bathrobe? You ever spend any time with him?
You know,
Vinny the Chin.
Yeah, you know... He was been doing that so long, and I've met, you know, him before that happened. You know, I met him before he was, he was the boss. You know, so when I met him, he was just a regular tough guy, not a, you know, boss or whatever, you know, underboss, whatever the chain of command is now. But I thought he was a real Mad Hatter. I thought he was really tough. He was hard to deal with. He wasn't the most pleasant guy to talk to. I mean, because he was cut. I mean, he was cut. You know, he wasn't able to, you know, sit down and have a nice conversation like we are. That didn't happen, you know. In any capacity, even if we want to talk about Tattinger's, because he used to send my father a case of Tattinger's every Christmas. And my mother drinks Tattinger, and my mother and father was close with them. And he used to send a case of Tattinger to my mother, and it was a little note. You know, Chin. You know, and so he wasn't a big, big talker, you know. And I was younger, too, you know. So I happen to like the guy, but, but it's hard to deal with these people, you know. And they're not regular, you know. Like I try to tell my kids and everything, they're not regular people, man. You know, you're trying to take abnormal people and try to evaluate why they do something wrong or why they're not, you know, in society so properly. These people are not normal people. You know what I mean? They're set in their ways. They believe in something, right or wrong or indifferent, and they believe in it. It's like, you know, almost like a sickness, man.
But they do, some of them do give off the impression. I know a lot of guys growing up, too. Frankie more than me. But I know both, you know, Greeks and Italians. But a lot of Italians I knew, you would never know. They are what they are. Because it was just, you know, they don't, back in those days, they didn't flaunt it. You know, hey, here I am, you know.
You would know if they had a beef, you would know it.
Yeah, like my friend, my good friend John, who owned a restaurant, piece of a restaurant in Brooklyn. He owned a piece of it, and then when I used to go there, he used to send drinks over to me all the time. All the time. Now, you wouldn't think that a guy like this, in his position, man that he was, his persona was portrayed in the film Donnie Brasco. And the way he was portrayed in the film, you never think this guy would be sending drinks over to you.
Yeah.
It was just, yeah. You would not think of it.
Well, Hollywood is not the most
accurate.
Accurate.
That's for sure.
At all. I wouldn't watch anything you see there. Don't trust. If you want anybody to watch gangster stuff, do not watch TV.
So you guys must have seen a lot of wild stuff. I mean, I know me growing up, I can remember once my first gym. One of the guys was like a real tough guy who was involved in owning it. And there was some big bodybuilder who mouthed off to him. The guy just picked up a weight and threw it at his head. And the guy ducked. It went through the wall and all the smoke came out.
Mm-hmm.
Like, can you guys think of something crazy that you've seen? Like, what's a crazy? You don't have to say who it is if you don't want. But what's something crazy you guys saw?
I saw a lot of stuff, first. Man. I think the funniest, but what I think is crazy, is when my father, Roy, and Bobby Bongiovanni went to when Al Goldstein was trying to get School Magazine out in 1969 or 70, and he couldn't get it out because, you know, those days with the porno was really raw at the time. And he came down to us and asked us to help him out. And my father, Roy, and Bobby, not, you know, workers with, you know, construction boot type guys. I mean, they wore, you know, $500 suits at the time, you know. And they got a van, and they went to Manhattan, and they went to the three biggest newsstands in Manhattan, which was Block, Lenny, and I think another one on 57th and Broadway. And the Roy Musico turned around and said, "We're going to take this magazine and, you know, sell it. And you're going to make this kind of money and that kind of money." It was all legitimate, you know what I mean? You know, whatever the deal was, like just like any other company. And the guy said, "We don't want it," because they were all Jewish guys. And they said, they were all World War II vets. They were a little older, not that old yet, but they were a little older. And he says, "Well, just like, I'll tell you, if I'm going to leave it right in front of your stand." He says, "When I come back in the morning, if they're not sold or they're not there," he says, "I guarantee you that you don't have to go work the next day no more, because you ain't gonna have no newsstand." And they went next day, and the magazines were out, and it was all night stand. Between midnight and they got there 11 o'clock in the morning, they sold 400 magazines, right? When Roy got there, he told him and said to him, "Where's the magazines?" And the guy says, "I sold them," right? And he said, "How many more can you give me?" And Roy says, "I get as many as you want." And that day, they dropped off another 1,000 magazines. The moral of the story was,
sell the magazine or you get screwed, basically.
And what happened was that they did these guys a favor because these guys made tons and tons of money. But it was funny seeing a guy all dressed up with a newspaper, with bundles of newspapers in his hands, telling you to take the newspaper or you're going to have no newsstand left. I found that to be very interesting. I mean, I just really thought that was good. And the good thing about it, there would have been no newsstand in the morning.
So that was like it is in Hollywood. That was The Godfather.
Yeah, it was well before that.
Instead of a horse with no head, you would have had a street with no stand.
With no stand. They would have just hit it with a car.
That's the way to think of it.
They would have,
right?
Put some gas in.
These things happen.
Yeah. And it was so stupid because it was to make money. But it was raw at the time, you know, and they wound up making a lot of money off it. Well, Goldstein became a millionaire, so off a 25-cent paper. Yeah. So they should thank Bobby Ritchie and Roy that they took the magazine.
Thanks, guys.
Okay.
All right, we're going to go to another commercial break, and when we come back, we will continue learning all of this fascinating mob folklore.
You're listening to the Centanni Broadcasting Network.
High definition digital stereo.
Broadcasting to the world. Would you like to know what's going on in the Italian-American community and stay in touch, even if you don't live in Little Italy? There's a way to do it. There's a great newspaper out called GIA, the Giornale Italo-Americano. This newspaper is distributed nationally and comes out weekly, and you can subscribe by going to their website at www.giamondo.com, that's G-I-A-M-O-N-D-O.com, or call 718-592-2196. Check out GIA for all your information on what's happening in the Italian-American community. It's published in both Italian and English. It's a great way to read and follow up and practice your Italian as well. Check out GIA on the internet at www.giamondo.com. GIA newspaper, the Italian-American newspaper for today.
Hi, I'm Janice Ian. Do you remember how excited you were at the start of summer every year, and how the summer just started to drag on after a few months, and you couldn't wait to get back to school, see your old friends, make new friends, get new books and a new locker and a clean slate? Well, you should have been excited about music class, too, because that was a special room where you went to sing, perform with your friends, and learn all kinds of interesting stuff about great composers, instruments, different kinds of music and songs. We remember our music teachers because they were so passionate about helping us learn to love music. They helped to spark a love for listening to notes and voices and rhythms that continues to enrich our lives even today. I bet your kids feel the same way about music class. Ask them. And make sure they get involved with music in school and in their lives.
A PSA brought to you by MENC, the National Association for Music Education, and the National Anthem Project, the campaign to restore America's voice through music education. Music, part of a sound education.
This is Ivy Love from LA to the UK. www.ivylovemusic.com. High definition digital radio broadcasting to the world. Centanni Broadcasting.
Okay, we're back. And while we were away, I was chatting with Nick, and he said he was going to tell me the story of when he met John Gotti. So, Nick, what's the deal?
Well, many years ago, my friend Jack was dating Angel, which is John's daughter, and we went by the house to pick up Angel. My friend Jack had an IROC Z, tinted windows, you know, back in the days, you know, the cuisine kind of car. So we pulled up to the house to pick up Angel. As we're sitting there waiting, a black Mercedes pulls up next to us, stops, and then pulls away. Goes around the block, comes back again, stops in front of us, and pulls away. I'm like, Jack, we're freaking dead. The car comes around, comes back, stops in front of us again. Now Angel comes out and is banging on our window. Me and Jack are like underneath the dashboard because we're scared out of our mind. We don't know what's going on. So I said, Jack, we got to open the door. This is very disrespectful. So we get out of the car, and who comes out of the car, the Mercedes, is Sammy and John. So
that's John, Sammy the Bull for
right.
those of us. Who
Sammy the Bull, right. So John comes around, walks over to Jack, and he says, Jack, what's your name? And he tells him, you know, I'm not going to say his full name. And he was Italian. So John goes, okay, whatever. Then he comes around, goes to me, asks me my name. Then he says, you're not Italian. I said, no, I'm Greek. And he goes, ah, all right. Then he goes to Angel. They talk for 2 seconds. Comes back to the car. I said, Jack, we're definitely dead. He comes back to the car, and he goes into his pants, to his pocket, like his jacket pocket. I'm like, we're going to get whacked. So he pulls out a wad of money, and he gives each one of us $200. He tells his kids, go out and have a good time.
And what year was this?
Oh, this is going back. I must have been, I'm 46 now. I must have been about 21.
So that was a lot of money back then.
Back then, yeah, $200 for the night just to go out and have a good time. Each one of us, that's pretty good. You know,
you guys could have left the girl home and had a really good time.
No, that would never have done that.
That wouldn't have worked out.
That would have worked that well at all. You know, but that was the first time I ever met John. I met him one more time again during the Mike Tyson fight. If you remember the Tyson fight where I forgot who he was fighting. You probably remember when he hit that guy. It was like 5 minute, like 5 second fight. I'm not sure who it was. I went to see the fight with my uncle at the time at the Atrium Lounge right here in Manhattan. And I'm sitting at the table with my uncle. My uncle's very influential. You know, he's doing time, as a matter of fact, right now. And who walks over to my table to say hello to my uncle? It was John. I was like, I didn't know what to say. I was just like stunned.
You should have asked him for another 200.
I should have, right? But he looked at me because he looked at me. He remembered me. He whispered something to my uncle, and then he walked away.
Did he
away.
Say, "Give me my, where's my $200?
No,
where,
no.
Or now, where's my $800?
Yeah, really, right?
Where's your friend?
But he was pretty cool. He was actually pretty nice, you know. It was an experience. Put it that way.
And you said something about a guy in an Uzi when we were in the commercial too. What was the story about that?
Well, that's many, many, many years ago. Again, I must have been about 18. I was at a club in Queens, run by the Lucchese crew used to run it, but you know the Greeks used to run the show. They're also for them, and it's a Greek club where people are dancing. All of a sudden, this guy pulls out an Uzi or a machine gun, starts firing at the dance floor. He's probably trying to whack one of the guys that are dancing, and it was total pandemonium. People running everywhere. It was crazy. I'll never forget it. It was a pretty scary moment, you know.
Yeah, I think that would stick in my memory, too.
I wouldn't forget that night.
No, but it was even more interesting is no cops came. There was no ballistic, nothing. Nobody came down to see anything. It was after the shots were fired, the people scattered, place closed down, lights closed, like it never happened.
Well, I remember a guy in my neighborhood, a bar owner, who was involved in business, and his nerves were a little shot. Somebody once dropped a screwdriver on a garbage can. He pulled out his gun and hit the ground. So I saw a few things in my time.
Especially near the Gemini.
Especially over there.
I drank there many nights, trust me.
Do you remember the Chateau Bleu?
Chateau Bleu, yes.
Yes.
My band played there, too. It was owned by a guy, Ace.
Right.
That was on Troy Avenue and Avenue Ace, between H and guy. I think.
He was a Jewish guy.
That's right. Yeah. I remember that place. You played there?
Yeah, and they sell jerk chicken there, I think, now.
No, yeah, well. I remember the old Sahara. My good friend of mine, Johnny Lyons, that's where Sahara's where Larry got strangled in the 60s. We drank there for many years after that because a friend of ours wanted to buy in the place, and his name Johnny
Which
Lyons.
Which was duplicated in The Godfather.
That was good, yeah, the one of the stories off that.
With the tires.
That was on Utica Avenue off of Avenue D. Real hole. Huh. But we got in that place for many years drinking out of there.
Not far from where I was in the Cub Scouts. Good.
Not far from there at all.
Right around the same time.
Yeah, I think that place now was a meat market or something like that. There's nothing, you know, all the old places are all gone.
Oh, yeah.
And there was another place that my band played in a little later called Sonny's Playpen Lounge in Park Slope. I don't know if that rings a bell. That was definitely...
Fifth Avenue?
I think so, actually. It was definitely Sonny's connected. Playpen.
I think you know what he's talking about.
Yeah.
I think it was on Fifth Avenue, but I don't remember exactly.
Sonny's Playpen. No.
So where was a cool place to hang out for you guys? Like, what was your favorite place back then?
Well, when you're young, you know, I was a young guy, I used to stay on Court Street, downtown Red Hook, Brooklyn, and we didn't go much, you know, out much. We stood pretty much in the neighborhood. So, you know, there was a couple of local places that we stood out every night. You got dressed up and went to the same local bars every night, and, you know, there's a place called Juju's. There's a place called Butcher's Inn. You know, those were all neighbor places. The Court Terrace.
Brown Derby.
But Brown Derby was out of the neighborhood.
Yeah, it was out of the neighborhood. Yeah.
That was in Bay Ridge.
That was in Bay Ridge.
Yeah, that's where I used to hang out.
I think I was 20 years old before I left the neighborhood. And we stood in the neighborhood.
Now, somebody just texted in, what about Bamboo Lounge?
Rockaway Avenue. That was Sonny Bamboo's joint, yeah. Sonny Bamboo. That was a good place.
That was Paulie's place, too.
Well, I think Sonny was with Paulie. Yeah. So yeah, that was on Rockaway Avenue.
It's right off
and Avenue M. And,
near the airport.
No, on this side of the highway. It's Avenue M. And the Bamboo Lounge was.
Oh, it's right, East New York. It's right there, yeah.
Yeah, that was a good place. That was a nice place. A lot of people went there years ago.
Now, the other book that you guys have, because I want to spend some time on this stuff, your coffee table book. Tell us about that.
Coffee table book is volume 1, 2, 3 of issue 1, 2, and 3 of Mob Candy magazine. We took out all the stuff that we did, all the advertisements and all the stuff we didn't like, and we combined the first three together with a different cover and an alternate covers for the covers we did on the originals. So when you go in the magazine, you'll see some different stories, and you'll see the alternate covers we wanted to use. And we change the girls around and a couple of stories. But it's
you put
actually,
the breasts of one on the legs of another?
No. No. We should have done that.
If people could do that, if you could put like a game in there, that could be really popular.
Yeah, you could, but these model releases, you can't do that. but we used a couple of different girls, that some things I didn't like that came out the first one after we printed. This was a good way to eliminate it. You know, so it's a 200-page full color.
We can get it on Barnes & Noble, right?
You go to mobcandymag.com, mm-hmm. or you go to Amazon. Amazon has everything we sell. Amazon sells.
So that book has all the stories without the advertising. You're going to put out another edition of just the advertising with no stories?
If they pay me. Again.
Okay.
Well, they didn't pay me the second time. That's why I took it out for the second time. If they would have paid me, it would have been the coffee table book, but they didn't want to pay. But we're planning on doing a second volume 2, which is 4, 5, and 6 in the near future. Our main concern right now is the new issue with Samuel Bull's daughter, Karen Gavano, on the cover. That's what we're working on right now.
Now, in addition to the magazine, you guys have a pretty elaborate website. Like, what's the difference in the content between the magazine and the website, would you say?
You know, the website we put on pretty much is a vehicle to buy what we have. You know, to order all the magazines, or the coffee table book, or the new gangster book we wrote, and we show little snips of the girls that shot for the magazine.
A couple of stories.
A little
tease,
little cigar thing here, or maybe a gangster story there. That's pretty much what it shows. If you don't know what Mob Candy Magazine is, if you go to the website, you could probably look at it, go through it, and see pretty much what we do.
Now, I know some people are a little sensitive to the stereotyping as Italians, as mobsters. A, have you guys gotten any flack over that? And B, what other groups do you cover? Because I know you've got Bugsy in here, who is Jewish.
Well, the magazine covers every ethnic group.
You know what I mean?
We're not pigeonholing to the Italians only, because the mob in general is not just Italian. It's Greek, it's Irish, it's Jewish, it's, forget about it, Corsican. You can go down the line, Russian.
We just try to do the most interesting of them all. Now, to do if we want to do a whole magazine on the Greek, on the Russian mob. It's cool, but no one knows half the stuff, so it'd be sitting on the shelf because there's just no knowledge of it. You know, they're not going to
sell big in my neighborhood.
Yeah, it's big. If we get the Russian kids to buy it and you get it in their hands, yeah. But guys in Midwest are not going to, because never heard of it, and they don't know the stories. That's why we do a lot of historical stuff, because people, when they hear it, it rings a bell. You know what I mean? If you don't know something, they go, "Oh, I heard of Bugsy Siegel. I heard of Meyer Lansky." You know, Mishogorov. No one knows, man. You know, if we're not doing stuff that we're trying to be telling stories that people don't know. We're just bringing it into a light that that's interesting, because we do a different, when we do a story, we do always a little different angle on it, the Mob Candy angle on it. We don't give them right, we don't give them wrong. We're not saying it's right, and we're not saying it's wrong. So to bring something in light you don't know, it's not a tell-all magazine.
Now, a lot of people don't realize how many mobsters were Jewish. I mean, for example, Dutch Schultz was Jewish.
Yes.
A lot of people. Arthur Flagenheimer.
That's right.
There's a lot more than that.
German Jew.
And of course, Meyer Lansky, of course.
Yeah, Murder, Inc. was...
Well, if they buy the new book, there's 22 gangsters in here, and I think 12 of them are Jewish.
So we got 50%.
Pretty much so. Mm-hmm. I mean, pretty much so. I would say close to that. I mean, it's Brooklyn, and...
Because we would have sued you if you didn't give us, because that's what we do.
That's right. See, I cover my ass all the way around. But yeah, we pretty much covered all the way around with the gangsters. We did a lot about Murder, Inc. in this book because, from 1915 up, you know, the Murder Inc. was a Jewish crew, you know, and they were pretty bad, and they were running everything at the time, and, you know, so if you want to talk about Brooklyn, you got to talk about, instead of just talking about a couple of Italian guys that, you know, you had to fit in who they were dealing with, and it was so, you know, entwined with each other that you had to put the, you know, half them, or I could have done more, you know, but I can do a second book, that's why I left it at 22.
Okay, now what mobs has fascinated you guys the most? Because you obviously have a lot of, you know, expertise in this area. You knew a lot of these guys personally. But historically, even before your time, who did you think was the most interesting characters?
Well, I don't know, for me, before I came across any of these guys?
Either or. Like, who do you think was the most fascinating character? Either met or not met.
I mean, in the modern time, I would say John Gotti. And in the older, before that, I would definitely see Al Capone. I mean, these guys were flashy, you know, the glamorous in their own way. And that's what, you know, I find them definitely interesting and intriguing. And they still are to this day, you know. And I'm sure Frank would probably agree to some degree.
Capone was really interesting. But, you know, it was a wild, wild west those days, you know. You know, if you were just, you know, just a crazy killer, you know, you can get away with 92% of the stuff you can, you know, you can do. I mean, I liked Albert Anastasia. I thought Anastasia was a real, you know, real enticed guy, man, you know. So I liked the way he, you know, carried himself. And my favorite was Larry Gallo. I mean, I brought up around him, you know, and being around him all those years. And that crew, you know, because I was with them every day, you know, and I know what they did, and their attitude, and, you know, really personal, family-wise. So I get to know these guys, and I'm partial, you know what I mean? But I would say Capone and Albert before the newer guys, you know. You know, Joe Schiappone was very close to me, you know, and I thought he was, Schiappone was with Lucky Luciano. He was in Cuba with them and like that, and, you know, we called him Uncle Joe, so, you know.
Basically what The Godfather was, a big part of Godfather 2 was based on.
Yes, and, you know, my mother and Ann Schiappone, very close, and they were all in Cuba and stuff like that, and they were back, and so you get close with these guys, and you see them on both ends of the coin, you know. You see them taking care of business, and then you see them at home sitting with you, and having dinner and or going on vacations and stuff like that. So you get to see both sides of the coin, you know what I mean? You know, on the outside looking in, you only see one side. You know, you see somebody that's nuts or killer or nasty or whatever. There's two sides to everything.
Because I found the thing with the Iceman. Did you see that, Ted Kaczynski, the special on Lifetime?
Yeah,
really interesting seeing the stuff about his family life.
No,
for a guy who like killed 100 people.
Yeah.
He was very normal at home.
Yeah.
You would never think.
But his wife didn't ask him where he was going when he got up at 2 in the morning. She said he just got up, he put on his shoes, and he left.
With a leather apron on. Well, you know, a lot of these guys, you know, there's a difference between being a murderer and being a mobster. You know.
But which one pays better?
Probably a mobster.
Because
murderers don't last that long. They don't, you know, because they, you know, it goes to your head, or there's something in there that's just not clicking right, and most times it's not clicking right, you know. A lot of these guys that you read about.
And sometimes it's a magnum that goes to your head,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But it's usually a good reason why. I mean, I know a million people living that's, you know, that did stupid things, and they're not walking around dead. I mean, so got to do something wrong.
All right, we're going to go to another commercial break. When we come back, we will hear more from the guys and wrap things up. We'll be back.
If you love jazz, check out These Things We Dig, a new CD by jazz sax, flute, and clarinet recording artist James Aldean on Sexton Records. James Aldean has recorded 7 CDs for Sexton Records and appears regularly in the New York metropolitan area, including the great venue, the Whiskey Cafe. These Things We Dig features some of the best jazz and bebop styles, with James fronting the band, complemented by such great players as Mike Fonella, Phil Jones, Bob DeBenedette, Ron Naspo, and Wayne Dunton. You can get this new CD from Sexton Records by going to www.sexton.com. That's C-E-X-T-O-N.com. You can find out more about James L. Dean at www.jldeanorchestra.com. For the best in jazz, it's Sexton Records, the audiophile jazz record label. Sexton.com.
Jerry Barnes, and you're listening to the song Absence by the group The Virgin Mary. This song is available at iTunes and CD Baby. Enjoy!
Okay, we're back. Somebody just texted in the place, the Bamboo Lounge we were talking about. Was that in Goodfellas?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, okay. The answer is yes. Okay, we're back to the book. Brooklyn Mobsters. Gangsters, I'm sorry. 70 square miles of blood and balls. Sounds messy, I have to say.
A little bit.
It was messy. Brooklyn was messy.
Now, there are some names in here I'm not familiar with. Who was Harry Strauss?
He's Pittsburgh Phil.
Yeah, Pittsburgh Phil.
He worked with Murder Inc. Yeah, he was a bad guy from the 20s and 30s, man.
Who would you say was the baddest guy in this book?
Albert. I say Albert was probably the meanest.
Yeah, definitely Albert.
But you had other guys there that did a lot of murders. I mean, you know, Abe Reynolds.
Abe Reynolds, yeah. Reynolds that's true.
Was bad.
Who's Albert Acolytis?
He was a bodyguard for Anastasia.
Anastasia. He was a Greek guy that was a big tough guy, and Albert used to use him to, you know, bodyguard the docks in Jersey and on Manhattan and in Brooklyn. Right. Originally in Brooklyn, he was he kept the order, you know, in the unions and everything. He made sure everything went the way it's supposed to be.
A big Greek guy.
Yeah.
So they killed him too. You cover any of the Asian mobs at all in your magazine?
We haven't touched upon them yet.
No Asian yet, because I just don't think. I mean, we can throw a story, you know, in. You know, what I mean, but our readers are not this big fan on. I couldn't sell the Chinatown issue.
The Flying Dragons, the Ghost Shadows. There, that's all. Yeah. You know,
those are some pretty scary guys.
Oh yeah, they are.
Oh, definitely, you could put it in, but I couldn't do a whole issue on it. You know, because I just saw readership doesn't.
Unless we interconnect it with the Italians somehow.
Yeah.
That's the only way it would really
sell.
If we can link it together.
Yeah,
if we can link it. Yeah.
You know, we got stories with
which there is.
Yeah, we have stories with the Russians and Chrissy Tick. You know.
Don't mess with the Russians, Janish.
Yeah. They're cool, the Russians. But, you know, you want to know what you're talking about. And most of the stuff that's out there, which ain't much out there, is going to be do it. And it's not really, we don't have much knowledge on it, you know.
How'd you like Tony Soprano as a mobster?
Nah, he was okay.
I love Tony. Yeah, Tony was okay. a complex character.
Yeah, he was, you know.
I met Tony. Well, James, to be correct. I met the whole cast of the Sopranos.
Yeah, me too.
And so did Frank. Yeah. Hey, bunch of great guys, you know, but the character, Tony Soprano, in the sense of a real mob boss, yes and no.
He did a good job, but
there's other things that just didn't click.
How no would you say? What was off?
Psychiatrist?
No.
That was way off.
No, not at all. I don't think that was it. You know, he went around things. I met a lot of bosses. I never saw one as friendly as him or the way he speaks and stuff like that. They usually conjure. You don't usually yell at your boss. And I see a lot of yell going on. I've been around a lot of times, and I never saw nobody yell at Chin. I never saw nobody yell at
Carlo.
Carlo or Larry or Gas Pipe. You go yell at Gas Pipe. I want to see that.
What about Morris Levy? Do you guys have any dealings with him? He was an associate of Vinny the Chin who ran Roulette Records.
Right.
One of my former guests, Tommy James, from Tommy James and the Shondells. Mm-hmm. That's who his record label was. They never paid him. And when he finally got an honest accounting done, they owed him $50 to $60 million.
Yeah. I know it's before my time, but shit happens, man. Yeah.
Okay, so give us the contact info for how to get this book and your website.
Okay, the best place to go is mobcandymag.com, and you can get anything we sell on the order page there, from the past magazines to the coffee table book and to the new Brooklyn Gangster book.
Also Amazon.com,
oh, Amazon
for the book also as well.
Book.
Brooklyn Gangsters, 70 square miles of blood and walls.
And you guys sell some alcohol too, don't you?
No.
Oh, I thought there was some alcohol for sale on the site.
Well, not, you're not allowed to sell alcohol.
No, Frank. Actually, Frank has his own tomato sauce.
Oh. I could have sworn
Frank's
I saw
a great
that
chef.
On there somewhere.
I sell tomato sauce if you want it, but no alcohol.
No, it's hard to hear that.
No. I don't have no liquor license.
So they won't give it to us.
Has the economy been tough for you guys? How's this working out?
Well, we do, you know, we sell well, but all the money's made in advertising, and that's our weak spot, you know. So we have a fight every day, just like anybody else in this magazine business. The only difference is that the big boys, you know, had to fold 100 magazines because their overhead is so much higher than us, you know. You know, we do it the way we do it, and then we can keep the thing alive the way we do it, you know. If we went through corporate, we're screwed.
Okay, one more time. Website?
www.mobcandymag.com.
Okay. Nick, Frankie.
Thank you.
Great having you. We will be back next week with more stuff.
Thank you.
Thank you.
But for now, like many of the victims of the people on tonight's show, we are gone.